Good evening, everyone. Bit of background, crime novel featuring a lead character, we sort of in the lead anyway, called Slim Gunter, an investigator looking into a theft on behalf of an old associate of his. After some mistakes, mishaps and downright lies, Slim finds a dead body and a collection of video discs that some people might think of as being pornographic. In the first excerpt that I'm going to read, two policemen, Detective Inspector White and a junior of his, get wind of the fact that Slim has these discs and lift him, put him in a car. Shortly after, he's had a pint of cider thrown off over him, but that's kind of by the by. And then the second extract is when Slim, having stayed in the pub for rather longer than perhaps he should have done, comes home to find his girlfriend, who's called Lady, has been assaulted. So we've got two chunks of violence, really, and unpleasantness. One kind of in the moment and one after the event. White pulled away and pointed the car towards Kingsway and the road to South London. At the end of that road would be Carter Street Nick with its basement rooms. I thought about telephone directories and wondered what it would feel like to get the London South residential around the ear hole. Things had moved on since they did you with a fire hose or rolled up newspapers. Some bright officer had noticed that good old yellow pages came in useful for something handier and a lot cheaper than a plumber. It seemed likely that my fingers were going to be the only things capable of walking. Neither of the policemen said anything, but the one with the thick neck chewed his lips and breathed noisily through his nose. He seemed head up about something. The spots on one side of his face sat proud of the skin, a copper with a built-in siren. White drove slowly round the Alwich, where a group of men were shouting at one another at the bus stop. A marked police car with a light flashing was parked in the road. I considered jumping out and shouting, but the uniforms were busy listening to the shouts of the drunk and the obstinate, and most cop cars had doors in the back that only opened from the outside. White looked out the window as we slid by. Not safe on the streets, not at all. He laughed loudly, and the acneed face sitting beside me split into a grin that looked like a pizza broken in two. If there was a joke there, it had sailed straight over my head. The Elephant and Castle shopping centre had been painted pink and was lit up by spotlights. Somebody with a snazzy suit and expensive spectacles had dreamt that one up. Somebody who thought a bad pun could make people's lives better. Somebody who didn't live in SE17. Carter Street was a small turning off the Walworth Road, about a mile south of the castle. The railway line and the housing estate had chopped the end of the street off, leaving just a large garden and one building, which is where I was going to get my particulars taken down, amongst other things. White and his sidekicker stayed quiet as we moved towards the station. I could see Lady with her hair tied up with a pair of tights. Her face would be warm if you put your cheek against it. Small hands would squeeze your arms and pull you towards her tiny settee. Thick Neck did not have small hands. His were big and pink, with sandy hairs growing on knuckles that looked like ham hocks. I could always eat soup if they knocked my teeth out. Pea and ham soup. There was a joke about that, but I couldn't remember it. Carter Street appeared on our right-hand side. As the car moved past it, I opened my mouth. I might have said the word but. White turned his head and said over his left shoulder, "Not that easy, Mr. Gunter." The cheese and tomato grin appeared again beside me. It reminded me that I felt sick and smelled of cider. Thick Neck pulled me out of the back seat with one paw. I didn't struggle. I was tired, and he could kick me to bits of the street easy enough, even if I had 8 hours sleep and a bowl of muesli. The Roland Estate was the kind of place where kickings happened often enough, and people just turned up the sound on their widescreen TVs. White had a set of keys. He held open the security door while I was pushed through. There was no tape across the door, nor a yellow notice appealing for help. Just a high letterbox. I looked at White while he fussed over Simon's different locks. "Very cute, Mr. White. Very cute indeed." "Glad you like it," he said. He seemed pleased with himself, which didn't make me like him any more. Thick Neck gurgled his appreciation of his boss's cleverness. White stepped away from the door and waved an arm. "Mr. Fraser," he said to his colleague, "show Mr. Gunter in, although I think he already knows his way round." Fraser then grabbed me by the wrist and dragged me into the flat, which made me mutter some reproachful words. The big lump then marched me into the living room and took me on a tour. He held my left hand in his mitt and kept planting it on the flat surfaces, like he was doing a fingerprint test. I didn't like it much, but it was better than being beaten up. I could see what they were thinking, but I'd never have denied being in the flats. There was no need for this pantomime. After a minute or so, White called a halt. Fraser then shoved me into one of Simon's leather armchairs. I half fell into it and looked at him and shook my head. He didn't like that and gave me a slap that made me shake it a lot more. White said, "Easy, Mac," in a mild tone and stood in front of me. I listened to bells ringing in my ear. "Now," said White, "it's time we had a chat." His dialogue was lame enough for the glue factory. "Are you sure?" I spoke through a slightly thickening lip, which gave me the beginnings of a lisp. "About this thing, I mean. I might be late getting up in the mornings now and again, but isn't this the 1990s? That Sweeney routine, it's a bit old hat, isn't it?" "Fuck off, Gunter. That boy's been killed, murdered. I know you came to see him. I know you've been hanging around the hive. You're made for this." "Well, why didn't you pull me for it then? Why this farrago?" Fraser looked confused. He thought farrago was somewhere near Alicante. White shook his head. "I'll have you soon enough, don't you worry about that. But I need something more. Tell me about the pawn, starting with where is it?" White pushed his face close to mine. His breath smelt like a mop bucket. I sat back in the chair and breathed some decent air while I still had the option. "Pawn? What's pawn got to do with anything?" I said. I wasn't sure what I should have said, but that clearly wasn't the right thing. White shook his head and turned to Fraser, who made an animal noise and slapped me again. I was waiting for it, but it didn't buy me anything. My head felt like it was four sizes too big for me, and I could taste salt behind my teeth. "For fuck's sake," I yelled, which brought me another one that nearly took my nose off. I'd been hit in the face often enough, but I wasn't finding that I liked it any better. Blood ran from both nostrils, and I lifted an arm and wiped some of it away. Another suit gone. White seemed unmoved either by my pain or my dry cleaning bill. The videos, the films, the discs, the porn. Each word was punctuated by Fraser's fat hand. I started to see grey edges to things. I waved a hand. It should have had a white flag in it. "Mr. White," my voice had more than a hint of a sob in it, "I'll give you what I have. Some DVDs, they're at the office." "There. I knew you'd get the message. Didn't I say that, Mac?" White loved it. He looked like a cat with its own milk float. Fraser had a wide-eyed look and something that looked a little bit like dribble at the corner of his mouth. His hand swung in front of him. He liked his work. A vein stood out on his forehead and one of his spots glistened at me. "Mr. Gunter," said White, "perhaps you could give me the keys to your office and I can go and pick up the merchandise. You and Mac can stay here and have a chat." I shook my head. "It's a combination safe. You need the knack, and if you think I'm staying here with that flip..." I never finished the sentence. Fraser made a roaring noise like he was pretending to be a lion and kicked me on the knee. That got some noise out of me too, even if it was less valiant sounding, and I fell forward and sprawled on the laminate floor. Some blood dropped either from my nose or my mouth and spotted the pale wooden floor. Fraser was making more noise, almost as if he were speaking in tongues. I heard White tell him to take it easy while I tried to get into a sitting position. When I put my head up, I saw White put both hands on Fraser's shoulders. The blonde kid pushed back and I heard him repeat the same swear word over and over. If he didn't take it down a step or two, Slim Gunter was going to leave the same mess on the carpet as Simon Wolfe. I watched the two of them dancing and felt the blood run out of my face. After what must only have been 4 or 5 seconds but felt like an hour, I started to dream. In my dream I heard music, trumpets playing, the music from an old TV show, Zed Cars. Somebody started to laugh. When I opened an eye, White was talking into a mobile phone. They left me sitting on the wood effect floor, gaping. Fraser was still practicing the C word but stopped throwing his limbs around. White wore a slightly troubled look as though he was chewing his moustache. Neither of them looked at me as they marched out of the living room into the corridor, but Fraser turned and spat on the floor. There was a slightly pink tone to his gob. He must have been chewing the inside of his mouth. I kept quiet and watched them leave. The door to the flat banged, the security door clunked back into the locked position, and I heard a car start. After a few minutes, all I heard was my own breathing and the faint sound of cars on the main road. It only took me a week or so to make it to the bathroom. There wasn't a mirror in there, which was nice, but there was no towel either. So I splashed some water on my nose and kept at it until the water running into the sink stopped turning red. The lumps would take a little longer to straighten out, and I'd have some fairly luscious lips for a good few days. All the better to kiss with. I tried walking back to the living room and made it, with the help of the wall and a handy radiator. I looked longingly at the leather chair. It gave me a come-on that would have made an Amsterdam window girl blush. But I wasn't about to sit there and wait for these two to come back or send the flatfoots round. I cut the chair dead and left the room. My limp was bothering me, but not as much as the questions that were being yelled inside my head. As I leant on the against the wall by the door for a bit of support, I felt my foot sliding across onto a small heap of pizza leaflets, minicab business cards, and envelopes promising all things from low interest to immediate disconnection. My foot moved the pile and I saw another piece of mail that wasn't junk. "We tried," said the card, "but you weren't in." No, he was in the ground. The item was too big for the letterbox, but either way, it was sitting at the sorting office. That's the first chunk. Second chunk is Slim has just been in the pub after a little episode of his own and has been ordered home, but it's taken slightly longer than he should have done, with regrettable consequences, because when he gets home, his girlfriend has been smacked by the same unpleasant policeman. And I'll do this as quick as I can. I hadn't needed another pint. I could have finished the one I had, tucked my mobile phone in a suit pocket and gone home via the chemist with the black and green vitrolite signing. But I'd fancied the space, the quiet moments when the beer had settled and the only people in the pub spoke in low voices or idly flicked through newspapers, not much caring what the story was, and let the afternoon drift by like a barge on a quiet canal. What difference did one more drink make? Nothing, really. Besides, Estrella had burned me up with her evasions, prevarications and downright bullshit. And her dog had annoyed me, the little bastard. I'd earned a drink, so I'd had one. So what? I couldn't see how it made any odds. There wasn't anyone who could have known in advance, so why beat yourself up about it? That's what Lady said in a small voice. She spoke through lips that belonged on a dugong, with one eye to match. A blue-brown lump pushed an eyebrow up so it looked sparse and tight, like the plucked and teased affairs borne by women with too much money and not enough self-esteem. I held my bag of goods in one hand and put the other one across my face, pressing my cheek against my teeth, which couldn't decide whether to chatter or clamp tightly like a dog with a rubber ring. In between the gaps, one word fell out of my mouth. "Jesus," she said, "don't bring him into it. Another man without a proper job and notions that have caused a lot of trouble." She was trying to smile, but not quite making it. "Come on in, we can compare abrasions." I shut the door to Lady's flat, which opened straight onto her living room, placed the bag on her sideboard and placed an arm on her shoulder. "Not now," she shrugged away from my touch, sat back down on her small sofa and pulled a big blue scarf around her shoulders. I took a position on the wooden chair under a bay window, which was covered in a heavy calico curtain. Below my throat I felt a big gap, as though my internal organs and yards of intestines had been cleared off to be replaced by an empty space. My hat sat on my lap, which gave me something to do with my hands as I looked at Lady, who one way or another had a bruised look about her. "What happened to you then?" Lady indicated with her head at my missing buttons and rather crumpled look. I shook my head, not wanting to talk about the three pigs and the getting all the way home. "Nothing. Well, not really. Is this Fraser?" I pointed at my own eyebrow. "I guess so, from your description," she said. "We never got as far as the polite introductions." Lady's face did some crumpling of its own, and her thick lip wobbled like an egg custard. As the tears broke over one cheekbone that was raised and rouge red, I tossed my hat away and stepped forward out of my chair so I was on the floor in front of her. I held her knees with both hands clasped, as if in prayer. She brushed a hand over my head and cried while I said the same word over and over again. Fraser had come in on his own. White must have sat out in the car, combing his moustache and thinking of new ways to make my life unpleasant. Lady had answered the door without checking who it was. After all, I was due back any minute. And she just opened the door to find Fraser shoving her back into the hall. Lady had come up against overly aggressive men often enough in her job, angry and confused men who couldn't see why their partners had run away from another Saturday night special would turn up at the refuge, throwing their weight and arms around. All they wanted to do was talk. Talk backed up with boots, fists and forehead. The difference was that at the refuge they had a steel-banded door and a panic button. All Lady had was a boyfriend sitting outside a pub, minding his own Guinness. Thank you.